Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 151 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
So we're back.
We're back.
That's always good to know. And we survived 150, and now we're on to what comes next, which is 151. And we're here to talk, I think, about another episode.
I think we are. I mean, we only have two. Oh, I'm sad.
One more. One massive one. But so this is 212. And what was it called?
The Hail Mary.
Before we get to that, we have a little bit of your feedback for 211. But before we get to your feedback, this week's episode is sponsored by Blue Apron. Blue Apron has fresh, high-quality ingredients that taste better and are better for you.
So this week with Blue Apron...
What did you cook, Summer?
I just did it like today, so it's fresh. It's top of the mind. I had catfish. She looked really nervous when I said it. I had catfish, and that came with parsley, mashed potatoes, and a Cajun slaw. Now... the one thing I do want to say about this is that I'm not going to lie, I got a little nervous when I agreed to a fish order. And the only reason I say that is because if you are a fish lover, you know that fresh fish is miles away from not fresh fish. So I always have that fear, especially even when I buy fish in the grocery store, that I'm going to bring it home and it's going to smell fishy. But if you are a fish connoisseur, you know that fresh fish does not smell fishy. That was a lot of F's, and it was difficult, but I got it out. That being said, when I...
Outlander series has a lot of F's. F.
Are you talking about like doing it? Whatever we talk.
Yeah.
Okay. I did not expect that from you.
I mean, and then there's Frank.
Oh, there's that too. Okay.
And Fergus.
Okay. So when I got my box this week, I knew that there was a fish ingredient in it. So I said, that is going to be the first meal that I make this week.
Fiery cross.
She's interrupting me to continue mentioning F's.
I had to get in
when
that.
I am trying
to make
discuss.
It legitimate that I'm not just talking about sexy time. Okay, go ahead.
I preferred it the other way. That being said, when I got my three meals this week, I have one turkey, one beef, and then the fish meal. So it was very clear to me that the first thing I was going to cook was the fish, just because you don't want your fish to not be fresh. So when I took all my ingredients out and I cut open the sealed pack of the catfish, and there was no fishy smell, which is a brilliant sign that this is some fresh fish. And my daughter, who is not super adventurous, but has eaten fish before. I did not specify that it was catfish. I just said it was fish. Ate it, loved it, had seconds. It was a brilliant meal. It was easy to cook. It was easy to follow instructions as always. And it tasted amazing. So I'm excited for the rest of the week. I have some turkey meatballs that are with a hoisin sauce. It's a lot of an Asian meatball. And then I have a seared steak with potatoes. And something else. I think snap peas. So I'm super excited about the rest of the week. I don't know about you.
My favorite meal this week was the mushroom and potato pizza. I mean, it would take me way too long to describe it, but it was so, so good. And the best part that I kind of cried with happiness when I saw it was coming, I was like, oh, pizza, that's interesting. Potato, that's interesting. Wonderful cheese, great, you know, spices, everything. The thing that I liked when I was taking it out of the box and then put it in the fridge and then I unpacked it later on to cook it was there's this like mound of pizza dough. They didn't send you flour.
No.
You don't have to make it. I was just ecstatic that the dough was there.
No, it was. And it was like this giant happy ball of pizza dough. I mean,
it was a good size.
Pizza dough makes me happy. I actually bread dough in general. I love bread. I feel like Oprah right now. I love bread. But I don't eat that much. But it was delightful and good to look at. So as always, Blue Apron knows that when you cook with incredible ingredients, you make incredible meals. So they set the highest quality standards for their community of artisanal suppliers, family-run farms, fisheries, and ranchers.
Whether it's Japanese ramen noodles, wild-caught Alaskan salmon, or heirloom tomatoes, or my pizza, Blue Apron is bringing you the best. For less than $10 per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. So check out this week's menu and get your two meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/outlander.
You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/outlander.
Blue Apron, a better way to cook. And now on to your feedback. First up is Deborah.
Hi, it's Deborah from New York. I think the fact that Murtaugh delivers Sandringham's head to Claire has less to do with keeping Monroe alive than solidifying Murtaugh's relationship with Claire. It was a testament to his utmost respect and love for her, all made more poignant with our knowledge from the books of what's to come. Can't believe it's almost over. Thank you. Bye.
I completely agree. I feel like this season just started and it's almost over.
You know, I'm going to make a crack here. So I have read a few places or seen headlines or seen people talk about it, especially on Twitter, about something along the lines of, where's the sex? Speaking of F, where's the sex? Right? Like there's so much more sex in Outlander than season one, than season two. I mean, they had like the pregnancy sex scene, but that was really the truly only like slightly graphic sex scene, right?
Yes.
And my answer, my very cheeky answer to that question is, where's the sex? Is, look, y'all, they had 13 episodes instead of 16. So they already shortened the length of the series, right? Of mm-hmm. the seasons and the hours, number one. Number two, the amount of sex. I mean, there's still sex in the books, but you do have to look at the story. It is completely different from Outlander. It's how they still come together and relate as a couple, that they're very sensual and very earthy, and sex is extremely important to their relationship throughout the entire series, no matter what their age is. Great. So it's fewer episodes, so less time. It is a different book. They go through a lot of struggle here, the intrigue, all this stuff. You know, there is less in the series than in the books, but again, you're cutting down the time, and I don't know, I've said that like four times. But also, the books only get longer, and they've already cut out stuff that was not necessarily, and they've changed stuff, and they've kind of shortened things. Look, if they're leaving out minor plot points, or if they're shrinking things down, and so basically they're trying to fit what they can into 13, I'm sorry, they're not going to add sex scenes. Those are extra. We don't need them. Do we want them? Of course. But the point is, when you're already working so hard to get it to fit and having to get rid of characters, shrink characters, like we said early on about DuVernay, you know, they shrunk him in with the guy who did her in the little, did her feet in the alcove.
Did her.
My point is, they shrank characters, or they put them together.
Condensed.
They condensed. Yeah, but I mean, put two into one.
Yeah.
But
that's condensing.
Well, condensing means to shorten. So,
you know what
basically,
my question is, though?
If there's stuff they left out on purpose, mm-hmm. they're not going to add extra sex scenes back
in. No, but after last season, not so much where's the sex scenes, where's the beef, man? We had two graphic scenes of male nudity. We had none this season. I'm okay with that. I'm just saying.
I'm very okay
you
with
set
that.
A precedent with season one with gratuitous penile offerings.
Deborah, look what you've done. I'm just kidding.
I blame you, Ginger.
You blame me because of the sponsored by the alphabet thing? The
maybe.
Letter F?
Yeah. Maybe you put yourself in that
state
of
mind. So
maybe
this is not sponsored by Blue Apron. Maybe this episode is sponsored by the letter F. Cool. Fiery Cross, effing, Fergus, and Frank. Any more Outlander Fs, let me know. I'm sure there's one
I'm sure
missing.
There's plenty.
Plenty I'm missing. Next up is Heather.
Hi, ladies. This is Heather from Michigan again. Just wanted to get some feedback on 211. And your podcast 150, congratulations on that. Four quick points. Number one, if you recall, I was so vehemently unhappy with episode 208, very, very angry. Well, the past few episodes have been so wonderful again, especially this one. Of course, Diana didn't let us down, that I am happy, happy, happy. It's back to the show we know and love, and that was just a speed bump. Number two, I was walking on my treadmill when you guys were having an extended discussion about Sam Nettlebush. I almost had to get off. Just stop, guys. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. That is my new phrase. I think I'm going to co-opt that. So thank you for that. Number three, I love knowing all about all the production that goes into this show. Like, I've really gotten into understanding how this all happens. I had no idea about TV production before. And it really makes me appreciate all the hard work and production quality that goes into all these shows that I enjoy so much, like Outlander, Game of Thrones, Vikings, all these things. It's so much hard work these people do. But now all I can think when I see a shirtless Jamie is, oh, did they have to put the back scars on? Did Sam have to sit in makeup for 4 hours that day? And so when he was doing that lovely prayer over Claire, all I could think was, oh, they're keeping his body just so we don't see his back. I bet you Sam didn't have to have the scars that day. I'm such a nerd. I can't appreciate, you know, the lovely prayer and, of course, the lovely man on the screen and all that nonsense. And four, between this on Saturday night and then Game of Thrones on Sunday night, I've never been so emotionally satisfied over witnessing two gruesome revenge murders as I was in that 24-hour period. And I don't know what that says about my character. Hopefully nothing bad. Thanks, ladies, and keep on doing what you do. We love it. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Heather, you can use Nettlebush as much as you want.
But you shouldn't.
Oh, no, girl. You should. As a matter of fact, next time we're on the treadmill and you hear it, you should yell it. I'm just kidding. They might kick you out.
You just need to be more careful. Just be careful on the treadmill. Maybe treadmills aren't the place to listen to the podcast.
I'm
going to
tell you, people have told us that they've all, I wouldn't say fallen off. People have told us many times, either they're out walking or driving or on the treadmill, that they've listened to us and laughed and like people look at them so hard. Oh my gosh. Not even our podcast. Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. Our podcast makes me laugh when I'm editing, because when we're recording, it's in the moment and I probably laugh like a hyena every three minutes. When I'm editing, I'm revisiting it all because it's been a day or two, depending on when we record. And it reminds me, oh my gosh, we said that. That was funny. Oh my gosh, we can be kind of funny. Typically, I do not revisit a third or fourth time. Typically, it's recording and then it's editing and then basta, because I have a life. It may not seem like it, but I try and have a life. And we're on to the next week's episode. And we have another show that's neglected. So if anything got revisited or whatever, it would be that one. But anyway, so yeah. But the ones that affect me, so likely not ours, is other shows that I listen to that like some random funny thing that happens is I will be on the treadmill and I will laugh out loud. And it's about, I don't know, I get on the treadmill about 5:20, 5:25 in the morning, and I'm done by like 6:10. And oh yeah, people may be awake-ish and on, what do you call those machines that go like that?
Ellipticals.
Yeah. So there's like in the room I'm in, there's bikes, ellipticals, and treadmills, I think. I think that's all that's in there in the room I'm in.
It's the cardio room.
Exactly. It's the cardio. You've been there, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So it's the cardio room. So I'm pretty sure that's all the stuff that's in there. It's not very full. There might be like 10 people in there.
Well, you go like 5
the TVs are on. The TVs are on and you can like read, what do you call them? Closed captioning, which is awful. It's because it's so fast and the news is so fast. I think they do it like on word recognition and not someone typing it, because it's awful. But anyway, those are the conditions in which I'm on the treadmill and I'll listen to some podcast. And I have almost kind of like not really fallen off, but like grab the arm holder thingies or the thing in the front, whatever it is. And I know the dangers of being on a treadmill and then laughing like a hyena. I don't think I've done the hyena thing, but I've laughed. And it's, number one, embarrassing because people look at you like, what? Number two, you don't want to fall off. And so you're like trying to make sure you're, you know, where you might knock your phone down or your earbuds come out. Yeah. So.
But I think that should be like a new sport.
Treadmill podcast listening?
Yeah. Just because how long can you stay on?
As opposed to battle humming?
Yeah. No, it's like the 8-second rule when you're trying to like stay on a bull's back. How long can you stay on the treadmill while laughing hysterically? I think that should be a new thing.
Hey.
Can you go 8 seconds? But you have to be like really laughing.
Oh, no. If I'm really laughing, I better be walking and not jogging.
But revenge murders are my favorite kind of murders. If I had to select my favorite type of murders, it would have to be revenge murders because they're so satisfying.
I will never be satisfied.
Oh, God. You know what, Ginger?
You started that. What is that?
You need to watch the video.
What video?
The Hamelonia.
Oh, that's the letter H.
Yeah. This is what you do. This is what you're supposed to do when you want to quote Hamilton.
I can
You
do
put
that.
The H up. So then we know you had a moment.
I can put up the letter H. That's not a problem. And last but not least, Allison.
Hi, Ginger. Hi, Summer. It's Allison from Florida. Just calling in about episode 211. It was a great episode. The title card was by far my favorite as well. And the whole episode and the changes that they made from the book, I thought were well done. And Diana did a fantastic job writing. I really do hope, too, that she will write an episode for each season, because I think it adds a lot to her, to the story. And I enjoy listening to the podcast every week. You two make me laugh. I was walking yesterday listening to your 150th podcast, and I know my neighbors probably thought I was crazy because I was laughing out loud. Keep up the great work, and thank you so much for what you do. It's always fun to check in on Twitter and communicate back and forth, and I'm just so glad that I found this group. Take care. Bye.
Again, maybe walking is not the safest way to listen to our podcast.
But didn't someone call in once and say that something when they were driving, they like
had to pull over?
Was it like I think it was like a Jared moment or something, because that would have been, that could have thrown anybody off. It would have scared me, I think. Okay, I think we're ready to talk about 212.
All right, let's move on to our episode discussion of episode 212, entitled The Hail Mary, which was such a delightful double entendre for me, because it felt to me like it was a nod to actually Mary being there, and also a nod to the attempt at the Hail Mary shot of stopping Culloden in the last ditch attempt to try to stop it. So it was a nice little double entendre, I thought.
And maybe not the actual prayer, but it was also a woman named Mary carrying a child, marrying a man who's not the father of a child.
I mean, they didn't call that the Hail Mary when it happened.
No. But that was the Mary who...
Is that like your Hail Mary full of grace? I don't know why that was really hard to say. Hail Mary full of... Is that where you're going with the Hail Mary there?
Well, that's...
Do you like 12 Hail Marys?
That came before the football move.
I know, but for me, it's always going to be football. I don't even like football, and for me, it's always going to be football.
So the opening title card was the map of Culloden Moor, with the Scots on one side and the government troops on the other.
It was more peg armies, right?
Mm-hmm. And there were two disembodied hands holding some wooden scooter thing. Move some of the troops.
It was like a shuffleboard thing, wasn't it?
Some of the troops, not the trips, up toward the other. So the episode opens. They are just outside of Inverness. Dread pirate Rupert, along with Claire, Jamie, Dougal.
Amazing in that eye patch.
He does not look bad.
He looks good.
And Fergus are riding to camp. And as the camera scans the camp, it's like there was a walker among them. Did you see him? There's like that token... That one token, extremely pale, extremely thin dude.
Was he in skinny jeans?
No, but he was a skinny jean.
Well, if he's the one dude walking and everyone else is on horses, of course he's the skinniest dude there.
No, there were more than one person walking, but he was like literally like almost bright white and had, I think, gray hair, and was like the thinnest dude there. Like, the camera kept going back to him when Claire's voiceover was talking about how haggard they all were and how undernourished and all that stuff.
Well, then they need to show the skinny dude.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. But no one else was as white or as skinny as him.
They should have given him a horse.
Claire's voiceover does its job of setting the scene now that we are closer to Culloden. It's hard to believe this is the same army, it says, that beat the British at Prestonpans and Falkirk, and who had ridden triumphantly into England. 5 months of retreat they'd had. Not enough food, and now awful weather. This mirrors Diana's description in Dragonfly and Amber, as well as Dr. Darren Lane's description of the conditions around the time of the battle. Now, Rupert hasn't quite found a new platonic life partner, but Ross does a decent job. Rupert offers him his whiskey. Now, for Rupert, that's something. Jamie, Claire, Dougal, Myrta, and Fergus enter into some type of rift dwelling, some abode, and Fergus needs a nap. Fergus looks all kinds of out of it.
Fergus is tired. He's done. He's like, what is he?
But I'm just a little boy. Okay, that was not wonderful, but it was better than the first. Jamie has Dougal do some reconnaissance. They all look haggard. Jamie wants to call a war council, and Claire confirms that the battle will be 3 days from then. So the day that they're talking is, would seem to be April 13th, 1746. Is it just me, or does Jamie's face look slightly thinner? It looked like he lost a little bit of weight. I know they, you know, weren't going for that, but
I didn't
just
notice.
A little bit, like a little bit. Hollow in the cheeks. Not a lot, a tiny bit.
I was distracted by poor Fergus.
I know. So Jamie still thinks that he may be able to get Charles to see reason. Okay. Basically, this whole episode is Jamie. You got to give him props. He's trying. He knows what the alternative is. He knows that if he does nothing, they're going
to
die.
But what kind of reason is he trying to show him? He's trying to say, don't meet on Culloden, but he's not saying, let's not do this anymore, because later in the episode, he's still saying to Colm, if you give me your men, because I will take them.
But that's in line with what I'm saying. He is trying to the very end to fight, whether that means...
Which is different from Book Jaime.
Book Jaime was never that gung-ho on fighting.
No.
He was very reluctant.
Right.
And but he did it.
He did, but he was always trying to find ways to take the Lallybroch men home.
And we still may see that.
Okay.
I mean, there's only one episode left, but if we see it, there's so much. I mean, I'm glad they wrapped up what they wrapped up here, but there's so much left to wrap up. Not to wrap up, but there's so much left. There's so much 60s
to happen.
There's
just so much left.
There's so much. There's all or whatever they show us of. But if they show us Culloden as a real time or as a flashback, whatever, it's all there. It's all there. I mean, every single thing that happens with the big D-man is in that episode. If they keep it, which they pretty much got
to
keep it.
Well, there's going to be a scene leading to her returning to the 60s. It's the 40s. It's going to happen. That being said.
That was the one that led to it.
Okay. And what leads to it is the big D.
The big D.
We not need to not have it called that. Well, do you know what a big...
Summer. It's either the big F or the big D. So
this is a bad episode.
Blue Apron is going to love us.
You need to explicit the crap out of this episode.
This whole show is explicit.
I'm just saying. We never choose. If you can extra explicit it, should.
I'm not going to.
Can we capital explicit it?
Nope. So Claire wants to go to Inverness to replenish her medical supplies. On the way to Inverness, she's in a chemist, or what a modern-day chemist would be, I guess.
An apothecary?
Pretty much. And Claire runs into Mary Hawkins, who is purchasing laudanum. And Mary's not very nice to Claire.
And you know what?
Rightly so.
Exactly. However...
Tell us what you think, Summer.
Well, I totally get it. And I think that it's deserved. But at the same time... Mary is delusional. She's delusional about...
He's going to get a job.
No, he's...
When he goes back to work.
He's got a job. He just can't work anymore. And I find it highly
suspect...
When
he recovers.
I know. As sick as he is, I find it very hard to believe that he was ever well enough to impregnate her.
Oh, Lord. It's called... I can't say that. It's called... She can take care of stuff.
I mean, I guess, but... really? She's just looking at me right now.
Me? Oh, you. I like Mary. I'm like, Mary's looking at what? No, she's not.
So it was that, and then she has no knowledge. Like, she's like, oh, the woman who owns the boarding house that we're staying at, she has a sick kid, so she's been helping me take care of him. But I'm like, if her kid isn't getting better, maybe she's not the one you want helping you.
Mary says that Alex contacted her after she was sent home from the Duke's place. And Alex had been given a position overseeing an estate near Inverness. And she went to him. And she says they are to be married. Now, Alex has told Mary everything. She knows how Clara tried to get him to leave her alone in Paris. And Clara explains that it was for both of their own good. Clara apologizes, however. She says... The situation was complicated. That sounds like, well, it is, a Facebook status.
Ugh, Lord. She's like vague booking. She's totally vague booking. She's like, I don't want to tell you everything why. However, that being said, there was a lot of stuff going on that maybe you don't know about.
I'm not going to tell you.
My anonymous prayer request. Oh, God gosh. Knows what I need.
Mary says that Alex will be fine and she's taking care of him. Claire wants to stop by to see Alex and apologize. They've taken a room. I had so much fun with this. Now, Mary says they've taken a room at McGillivray's.
But was there room at the end?
Hold on. Wasn't called that. But Mary says that they've taken a room at McGillivray's boarding house. Now, the first time I heard it, I heard body house. Because it says boarding house. Like, body house, not a body, not Mary. Mary's not staying in a body house. Okay, but it's not body, it's boarding.
But
okay.
Was it not the nicest boarding house you've ever seen?
I mean, the sign was kind of
inside,
cute.
Like the hallways. It was so nice. However, there were no chairs in the room. So everyone who was overseeing the dying patient just stood around and looked at him.
Now, stop the presses.
Okay.
Am I the only one?
Yes.
And I guess that means between Summer and I.
You're always the
Am I the only one who thought, will they introduce us to a McGillivray here in 212 who may or may not return in the future?
No, you're literally the only one who did. I promise you.
I can't help but think these things.
To be honest, I don't remember the name of the boarding house. I remember it was a boarding house.
Are you kidding me?
And I remembered it was a nice looking boarding house. Even though they showed the sign twice,
but that just proves to me that I am like the most that I am the most aural person I know. Audio, A-U-R-A-L, not O-R-A-L.
You pronounced it correctly.
I know, but I
the
did.
Way, because you pronounced it so hard that way, it made me go, haha, she's trying not to say oral. I got you.
Very hard, trying very hard not to say that word. The fact that I was watching the same show, but the fact that I picked up McGillivray and Summer picked up It's So Pretty. One is ears versus eyeballs. I am so freaking aural. It's ridiculous. I am so effing aural. It's ridiculous.
Ridiculous?
Like the big D. I'm trying to work in the D and F. I got the effing in there.
You just say it's ridiculous with a capital
oh,
D.
Oh, Lord.
The big D.
No, because you just did it for me.
You're welcome.
So, back in the Situation Room. The room where it happened.
The war room. You can't do that if you're going to do it anyway.
Oh, you mean that's a stand-in?
That's what you do instead of.
Well, then F that.
I
thought you meant.
Can you please do this from now on?
I thought you meant people would do that to give a warning.
No, you need to gang sign me instead of.
Never.
Instead of.
I'm aural, not visual.
Oh, my God. You look like you were like fingering the air right now.
That's not very nice to say.
You're like,
can we keep your
ginger? Nobody does that. Like, all you had to do was just look at me.
My right ab hurt.
Just look at me. This is all you have to do. No, just wait, just 1 second. Ginger, look. This is what you're supposed to do. It's you just put it up there and you just say it like, this is my placeholder. What you were
so
doing
you
is this.
Jiggle it. So you don't move your fingers.
No.
You just. I'm not doing that sign anymore because now I know it's a stand-in.
That's all you're taking from this?
If I start... I'm starting this section over.
That whole conversation we had and the only change you're making in your life is that you're not going to do this anymore.
Aren't you so glad this is being recorded? This is why in our lives we need to do at least one live recording.
With a video.
Never.
Oh, but
someone
everything would have made
us.
So much more sense.
If they can see us, oh, then that's fine. People who aren't there in the moment don't get to see.
Oof, okay. Oh, that hurts. Oh, everything.
So, back in the Situation Room, the room where it happened.
I called it the war room, and I'm ignoring that you just
that did works. That. That's okay, because that is your right. So, O'Sullivan says Claude Moore is perfect. For the British to win. I love that the prince just sits there in front of the fire, legs crossed, picking invisible lint. Jamie asks the prince to walk the camp and see the state of the ground and the men and their exhaustion, etc. Jamie mentions the French gold. Another interesting thing.
You know, this is the first time they've mentioned the French gold, and I'm wondering if they're mentioning it now
it's
because
the first
it has
time they
to come up
in Scotland.
Later. I know. I'm just saying.
They mentioned it in France.
I know, but what I'm saying is that this is the first... I'm wondering if they're bringing it up again so that we are ready for it in the next...
For the prep?
Yeah, for prep for Voyager.
Basically...
Because it's super important. They can't not have that.
It's more important for Drums of Autumn, but...
No, they need it for Voyager.
So Jamie mentions the French gold. Another interesting thing. And yes, laying...
groundwork for
first of all
seasons.
It's important to discussion because they are waiting, the prince was expecting it, right? But it's also helping lay the groundwork for future books, so just don't forget that. Pay attention. They should wait for the gold, which will buy food and weapons, and meanwhile the men will be rested. Then they'll have supplies that the supplies they need and will be able to fight the British more effectively, and they can choose also better ground. I think Andrew Gower looks more like the prince here as he talks to Jamie from the chair than he has in the entire series thus far. So though Jamie is his, quote, most trusted friend, the prince says that he's weary of retreat. He gives the men rest, but they will march to Culloden. And Lord Murray says, may he, about God, may he have mercy on us all.
Now, here's my question. Because, Jamie Fraser, don't hate me, people, because he's a fictional character, do we feel like, because he is his closest friend and the person he trusts the most, but he doesn't listen to him. He goes back and he's like, but you, John, what do you have to say? What is your opinion on this? Do you think that they're doing that to give it a more historical feel? Because Jamie Fraser was not a real person, that was the person he relied on, that specific character?
Very possibly, because they're trying. Matter of fact, I didn't know until this episode. Well, it didn't come up until this episode, but I was wondering how much they were going to do as far as keeping it. Obviously, the Battle of Culloden happened, but how much were they going to keep to the history leading up to it? Mm-hmm. And part of it was, of course, the night march, the failed night march. And they did it, you know. Well, they showed what they could, obviously. Right. And so I really think they're trying to show that Lord Murray, if I remember what Dr. Lane said, it was that, yes, it was a failed attempt, but overall, Lord Murray did have a good motive. He was, I don't want to say more level-headed, but he just seemed, I think, history, hindsight, 2020, that kind of thing, treats him more kindly than O'Sullivan, I believe. So Claire is walking into the McGillivray's body house. Inside, she is confronted with a shockingly ill Alex, who's basically coughing up his left lung. Claire starts to prep something to help Alex. Then Johnny comes in, not dressed in his uniform. He didn't want to attract attention, he says. His visit is a surprise for Alex.
And I wrote, Jack is back. Sorry, I mean Johnny. And then I said, here's Johnny.
Claire is shocked beyond words. She moves to leave, but Mary stops her and says that John has been very helpful with supporting them while Alex can't work. And in this conversation, I think it's because Mary, like, basically covers her stomach and, like, pets her stomach. Claire's like, ah, you're pregnant. Yeah. So Mary's knocked up. Now, both Alex and John know about the baby.
So, okay. That being said, how much time do we think has passed between the last episode and this one? At least a month or two.
So they said that it's been 5 months of retreat, and they began retreating at the last episode.
So 5 months has passed?
If not five, maybe four.
Okay. Just curious.
Because we don't know how much time exactly. It was a few days, I think. We don't know how much time exactly passed between the beginning of episode 211 and the end of episode 211. Because it was the beginning, right? When they all opened up and the prince is like, okay, we're going back. We're turning around. Right? He wanted to go forward.
The last episode. Yes.
211.
Yes.
That's what I said. So the beginning of 211 opened with the prince saying, you guys go back. Remember, Dougal got that letter. And he said, the prince wants us to leave and to go get reinforcements and go get food and supplies back at Inverness. So that's when they started, when they left.
Right. And it took them 5 months to get to Inverness?
No. But they had been retreating and dun-dun-dun.
Oh, no.
I tried to think of that earlier. I couldn't. What is it? It's not reading. Something and something.
He was retreating and reading every treatise on the shelf.
I was halfway right.
And I'm mad at you for making me do Hamlet. Hamilton.
No Shakespeare here tonight, girl.
No, but I'm mad at you for making me do Ham. I almost did it again. Hamilton, when I specifically asked you not to do it. So shame on you.
I have nothing to do with what you want to do. That's great. I'm happy for you.
Retreating and reading every treatise on the shelf.
There you go. Thank you. No, you got to like do it though.
I will not.
Do I have to?
Go ahead. You're the rap expert.
I am not a rapper.
Come on, Eminem.
Retreating and reading every treatise on the shelf. Now, where was that wrong in the end? I had the wrong like notes.
It was all wrong.
No, it wasn't all wrong. In fact, the
fact that you did it at all was wrong.
That I can go with, but it wasn't wrong. But I got the notes wrong at the end.
It's straight.
Oh, and I just did a little twirl?
Yeah.
I mean trill, not a twirl. It says, retreating and reading every treatise on the shelf.
You got to cut it.
That was wrong.
If I do it, you have to
Somewhere. I'm going to cut mine, except for the first.
It's, he started retreating and reading every treatise on the shelf. There would have been nothing left to do with someone less astute. They would have been dead or destitute without a cent of restitution. Started working, clerking for his late mother's landlord, trading sugar, cane, and rum, and all the things he can't afford. Said him, I can't go any further.
Okay, that has to stay.
No!
Summer, that was good! That was good. If I knew the words, I would sound better. I have the rhythm, just not the words. I'll just leave a tiny bit of it. Okay. It's so weird seeing BJR act so nicely towards someone. He really does treat Mary with kindness. So Claire leaves and he follows her out. He begs her to stay and cure his brother, but she says she can't. But she can help ease his pain. She says she wants something in exchange for her help. She wants to know where Cumberland's army is located. BJR is impressed. He's like, says, you impressed me, Claire.
Now, that's a little bit of a change from the book, because in the book, he's the one who approaches her to come and care for her, care for his brother.
On the streets of Edinburgh.
And he offers it up. I won't ask you to do something for nothing. I will give you information.
And you know me and hashtags. I only had one this episode, so you'll be happy. One was for BJR, and that was hashtag sexy face. It's during this conversation, it just popped out.
Can't we just hashtag this whole episode as the attempted redemption of Blackjack Randall? Because that's really what this was. It was almost like they were trying to make him a little bit of a better person. And the only person that makes him better is Alex.
And he's gone.
At the end. It was a group death at the end. It's like, anyone that needs to die in this episode, we're going to do it right now.
Do you know, wait, who was the person who made BJR better?
Alex.
Alexander Randall.
No, stop it.
His name is Alexander Randall.
Okay, no, this is not okay. It's not, lyrically, it's not the same. It doesn't have the right rhythm. We can't do it.
Back at the camp, Jamie's not so hot to trot on the idea that Claire is helping BJR, Alex, out.
Jamie was so barely in this episode. Like, it seemed like they threw him in every, I don't know, 20 minutes or so, just to be upset about what was going on.
And we'll get to that scene, but that was another change. In the book, it was Jamie. Murtaugh didn't go with her, and Jamie didn't technically accompany her, but Jamie did go, again, all
for the wedding
in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jamie did go to the wedding and was one of the
witnesses.
So Claire's obviously told him about BJR, and he wants nothing to do with him. And he wants her to have nothing to do with him. But they have intelligence.
Now, in the book, she has the intelligence, but doesn't tell Jamie where she gets it.
That's not true. Until... she just feeds it. And it's not a one-time thing. It's an ongoing thing. I will help your brother if you feed me stuff.
Right.
And he gives her a little bit. I don't know, maybe not every day, but he gives her more than
it's
one
true,
thing.
But the thing is, the book Claire would have taken care of Alex anyway.
Yeah.
So, I mean, she didn't need the extra information. She took it because it was offered to her. But I think that as a healer, she would never have thought to ask for it.
Ceres Claire would have worked on Alex anyway. She's the one who volunteered. She really didn't care much about the apology. That was to placate Mary. Although it would have helped Alex. She was only really interested in apologizing once she heard that Alex was there in that body house. Mm-hmm. She asked to go and look in on him and apologize. Ceres Claire also would have taken care of him if there were no BJR there. But she's not stupid. She'll get info to help the people if she can.
I mean, you don't say no if it's offered.
So they learn that Cumberland's army is encamped at Nairn.
And we also learn in this episode that Cumberland is 25.
Yeah, he was pretty young.
Real young.
Claire thinks that she owes Mary her help for Alex. And Murtaugh, she tells Jamie, can accompany her to go protect her if anything happens. Mm. At the camp that night, Colm McKenzie arrives.
I said, I recognize those legs.
Looking much worse for the wear. Now, they help him into bed, or they help him come in and get kind of comfortable-ish. And then they bring Dougal and Jamie in. Claire tends to Colm, and he knows he's near his end. He speaks with Jamie and then with Claire in private.
Now, the last time we saw Colm, we had one of our listeners say that she'd never seen Colm look so disheveled. Well, now you have seen him more disheveled. He looks even worse in this episode than he did in the last episode, but I think if nothing else, it's just to show the progression of his disease.
Colm commends Claire on their marriage, her and Jamie's. Now, one of the benefits of dying, he says, is that it makes it easier to ask for favors. He asks Claire for something, quote, something more final. That's an interesting way to put it. She is emotional about the request and her decision to help him, partly because she is a healer and partly because she does respect Colm, even after all they've been through.
Even after he didn't really help her get away from the witch trials.
Mm-hmm. Colm tells her that Galus's son lives. Galus wasn't burned until after the Baron was born. He's with William and Sarah Mackenzie. So we learn the baby's alive. It's a boy, and it was placed with a family, and his parents are named William and Sarah Mackenzie. Don't forget that.
I get real excited
when you hear little hints like this about future stuff.
When it's done 100% right. I enjoy the new stuff and all of those things as well. But
I get shivers.
But when we get
book stuff.
Exactly. When
not just book stuff, like, oh, they had a picnic near a tree. Oh, and they kept a picnic. No, that's sweet. When there's major stuff, like this sounds so
specific.
Oh, specific. Yeah. But this sounds so like, oh, that's so sweet. The baby lived. He's with the family. La, la, la. No, y'all.
That's laying the foundation for future seasons. And that makes me excited.
The ramifications of what we just relayed, and I know it'll go further than this, but right now we only have 8 books, are felt in book 8. So I'm telling you. And actually, you're not going to feel too much more until later books, right? Like maybe 6, 7, 8. But I mean, this is huge among us. Dougal, however, we learn, Colm confirms, does not know about the child. Claire gives him, Colm, a vial of yellow jasmine and says, when you're ready, this will make you, like, basically go to sleep.
She did. But let's also talk about Colm stating that Galus gave Arthur Duncan a quick death. She did. But we also have to remember she slowly poisoned him for years before the quick death. So he was not at his best health at any point. I mean, he was the most flatulent man I've ever seen described anywhere. Arthur Duncan. Have you forgotten the flatulent Arthur Duncan?
No.
You can't forget that. Anyway, my point is he did not have a good life. There was, and then at the end, while it was quick, but it was a death that had started years before that she finally just accelerated by, you know, throwing it over the edge with a ton of it. So she was slowly poisoning him for years before he actually died from his arsenic poisoning or whatever. Was it arsenic? It was arsenic, wasn't it? Cyanide?
I think it was cyanide.
It might have been. Listeners, this is up to you. Correct us.
I think it was from like fruit.
The pits
of fruit.
I think that is cyanide. I think you're right. Point being, it was not a quick death. So for her to have asked to give him what Arthur Duncan had, no nice person, as Claire generally is, would give him that death. So, but the yellow jasmine sounded delightful. There are some nights when I wish that I could have just a little bit of yellow jasmine. I'd love to drift off to a nice deep sleep.
Yeah, not forever.
Not forever. Just you know, for the night.
For the night. Back at the body house.
Boarding
Alex
house.
Is coughing horribly and BJR is holding him up. Now, Claire has Mary hold a cone of paper over his face and Claire blows smoke into the other end. Katrina sure does know how to puff a pipe.
I wrote puff, puff, pass, Katrina.
Is that a thing?
Yes.
Never see. I am so not knowledgeable about those things. That's okay. But it works.
No,
it helps him relax a little bit.
It was a scene of her shotgunning smoke into his mouth. I was just like, I've been to parties like that.
Through a cone?
We didn't need a cone. Usually
someone just opened their mouth or did you kiss them?
I don't. It wasn't really a kiss. It was more like you get up real close.
Like a fake CPR?
Kind of. But you don't actually have to touch mouths. It's just you get up real close and then you share breath.
Alex really does look quite terrible if you ever spend any time looking at him. And BJR hands him off to Mary once he's breathing slightly better. BJR, in his pain, lashes out at Claire and actually lays hands on her, telling her she'd promised to help him, like being accusatory. And she actually is helping him. And then Murta steps in and says, quote, "If you need to vent your frustration, then I'll happily oblige you," unquote. Now, my first thought upon hearing this was of Murta stepping up to be whipped. It's like he was just basically saying, if you're going to abuse someone, look, you're going to deal with me, right? That kind of thing.
I don't think he wanted to be whipped. I think he was saying, I mean, pick on someone your own size.
I mean, the Claire thing. If you're going to like bother her, you're going to have to come through me first, basically.
Yes, that one I agree.
But the first thing I thought of was, look, if you want to go through your things, that's all good. Leave the women alone. I'm here. Like, yeah, okay. He wasn't really offering himself.
Can we also talk about how many times Claire had to reiterate that she can't cure him? I don't know. Every scene they were in, she's like, they're like, you're not helping him. She's like, I told you, all I can do is make him more comfortable. I cannot cure him. They are in denial, both of them. Mm. Blackjack and Mary. Mm. They're hoping for a Hail Mary. They're hoping for something, some last ditch cure that she's going to think of on the fly that will fix him. And both of these gentlemen, both Colm and Mary, are not fixable.
Then Alex calls Johnny. And it sounds so pitiful to have him, as he keeps saying that. He needs him to do him a favor, he says.
Don't do him.
He looks to Mary, who nods her head slightly, as if to say, yes, go ahead.
Do you think she's already had this conversation with him?
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay.
At least here. In the book, it was a surprise to her, wasn't it? She didn't, if I remember correctly, I could be wrong, but I seem to remember, like, she wasn't in love with it, but she understood why he was saying it.
Well, so, Book BJR was not as against it as he was in this show.
Book BJR, well, it was a little bit different. Book BJR was also a lot more in shock, and So it's all right. Alex tells BJR to send for the minister. We find out it's for BJR's wedding. The look on Claire's face when she hears this, she looks at Murtaugh like, what the F? It was quite funny.
Well, the other thing that I wrote down was I said, poor Alex, he impregnated his girlfriend off screen. Like his only job, like this poor actor, his only job was to be sick and die for the most part. I mean, even when he was more healthy in France, he was still not well.
The wedding is to be between BJR and Mary. Alex wants his brother to look after Mary once he's gone. They want the child to be a Randall. As his widow, Mary would have more position in society and, of course, his pension and all of that than if she were the widow of this guy who had a job that he couldn't work much anymore of.
Right.
Nothing comparable.
But what's sad about that is that, he was a guy who had just a job and he was a regular dude and he didn't have any kind of fancy stuff at his disposal. But he was still the son of his parents. And it's sad to think that his parents wouldn't have stepped up and been like, this is our grandchild. You know, you married our son.
You know what the names of those parents were? I told you once before. Mary and Joseph.
Shameful. Anywho, point being, and even, okay, BJR, not the first son. He was the second son, correct? That's why he went into the military.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Because he was not like with most families, like the firstborn son gets all of the accolades and the secondborn son usually has to go into the military to do that. And then as you get further down, they have worse and worse jobs and they have no prospects. So, but, you know, I just don't see that in like clearly because I'm not from the same century, but I can't imagine and I only have one kid, but I can't imagine any successive kids being like, sorry, dude, you're not my first. You get nothing. I hope your wife took care of things.
Alex speaks to BJR's goodness, and he says that the goodness within him, that he believes he will do the right thing and help him out. And then there's a break from, I mean, okay, it's kind of like so-so with how it follows the books. The events happen, yeah, so that's the most important thing. But the way it comes about is different. BJR refuses to do it and stomps out. Like, he throws a hissy, and Murtaugh goes after him.
But can we talk about how obsessed Mary is with arsenic? Like, she mentions arsenic, like, two or three times in this episode. She's like, maybe we give him more arsenic.
And she's like, dude,
that's a poison and it's only going to make him look like he's refreshed. It's just going to flush his cheeks briefly, but it's not actually making him any better.
Back at the camp, Dougal confirms that the British are at Nairn indeed. And Jamie's all, yeah, we know. And Dougal's like, it would have been nice if you would have told me this. So I didn't have to go do this whole thing. And like, well, we found out after you left and whatever. So Jamie tells Colm. Jamie tells Dougal that Colm has arrived, and Murtaugh is now all up in Claire's biz and saying he can't believe they're doing this just to save Frank Randall, the mythical prick.
I Okay, that line made me laugh, but I love so much Murtaugh knowing about Claire. Mm-hmm. I love all of the conversations that happen between them. I love the way their relationship has evolved because of it. And as far as Murtaugh and his honorable intentions to marry Mary and to do that, I volunteer. I'll marry Murtaugh. If he's available and he wants a wife, I'll do it.
And we get a whole new vision of Murtaugh. It's a total mensch thing to do, to offer. And he pats himself on the back, and deservedly so, in that he describes how he looked after Jamie, and he hasn't done a bad job. Claire says that as Randall's widow, however, Mary would have BGR's pension and benefit from his pedigree. So not to knock Murtaugh, but it would be actually be better for Mary to marry exactly. BGR. So Murtaugh walks Claire to where BGR is staying, or where at least he went to, and she goes in alone to talk to him. He's a little bit in his cups. He wants her to help persuade Alex to not ask him to marry her. Mary.
To me, it looked like BGR was playing the mark me drinking game by himself. Mock me.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, but I have no clue what you mean by that.
I'm just saying he's sitting in the bar by himself drinking.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a reason for him to be sitting by himself drinking. So he's sitting
depressed. He doesn't want to get married.
Okay, but it's more fun to imagine a character playing a drinking game.
What happens to Mary?
You ruin everything.
What happens to Mary when he's not alive to look after her? He points out. Then he brings up Claire's curse, the date of his death. It's only days away. As a sister-in-law, Mary would be entitled to nothing. But as BGR's wife, she'd be entitled to his stuff. He says he's never harmed his brother, and she asks if that immunity extends to all of those he loves. He says, is that good enough for you? If I say that, would that be enough for you? Would you trust that word, my word, if I married Mary? Would you trust that I wouldn't do that?
It's his way of...
trying to get out of it.
No, it's not only that, but it's like... the writers and everyone's attempt at almost redeeming this character is
bringing
by him
to the end or the precipice. Yeah.
Right. Because as they pointed out several times in the episode, tomorrow is the day he dies. So he's not long for this world. So, and TV has a great way of doing this. They always, and Lost was amazing at this. Lost would always redeem a character and you get their backstory right before they kill them off. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's almost the same thing here where they're trying to one last moment humanize this character to make him almost have that redemptive moment. And I think humanizing the monster and part of me is like, I don't want it. Don't feed it to me. I'm not interested. He's the monster. But at the same time, I'm like, ugh. God, it's like that one episode of Lost where that character I hated, right before they died, they finally had that moment where everything made sense and you almost felt for them, and then they killed them.
Oh, boy. Then we go there. This is BJR's final release, talking about what he did to Jamie in the prison. It's not as juicy as it was in the book, and I think, thank goodness, but it was pretty good. His portrayal was really good. He says he regrets none of it. Not the pain, not the fear. He revels in it. And does she, Claire, really want Mary in his bed? Claire says that if he loves him, his brother, that should be enough to stay his impulses with Mary. Like, dude, are we losing sight of the picture that he supposedly only has days to live? Mary won't have a chance to be in his bed or be walloped.
But she tried. We haven't, and she hasn't, but...
in case she's
That's the thing. Everything she's predicted to date has come true.
But he doesn't
They don't know that.
Yeah.
But in his eye or his mind's eye or whatever, he's like, well, what if you're wrong? Are you really willing to saddle this woman to me knowing what I'm capable of?
Are you willing to risk that with Mary?
And he's the first character to go out and he enjoys making people uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But I feel like in this episode, he was putting those things out there in an attempt to get what he wanted, which was he wanted to not...
marry Mary.
Well, not only just to not marry Mary, but his his fear, his deepest fear, what it sounds like to me in this episode, is that he is going to do something to hurt the one pure thing in his life, which is his brother.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to disappoint him. All the things he's kept away from his brother for all these years, he doesn't want to taint him or his memory mm-hmm. by doing something awful to something he loved and something that was so pure for him. So his reasoning for not wanting to do that is a sound and redemptive reason. However, you know, he's convinced maybe he doesn't die, even though his time on this earth is very measured and ending soon.
So back at the camp, Dougal meets with Colm. Jamie is also there. Colm says he won't be leaving the Mackenzies to Dougal. Hamish will be named as the next chief, and he will appoint Jamie to watch over Hamish as guardian.
Ouch, right?
Dougal is pretty upset, and Jamie says he's honored, but he says that he actually will raise the Mackenzie banner and fight against the government.
Well, he not only mentions Jamie to be his guide and guardian, but he also says Ned. Like, not only was Dougal not being promoted, I guess, to chieftain of the clan or named chieftain of the clan, he was nominating or pushing forward his very young son and the two people he was putting in place to guide him toward taking care of his clan things were not him. So that had to hurt.
An interesting line they gave Colm: if the cause is lost, then you will put the lives of your men above all else. This is in part statement and seems you could also view it as a command. He knows Jamie just that well, and he wants his own men to survive.
Which I think is just a little bit crazy, because Book Colm didn't seem that involved in Jamie's life at all. Like, Dougal had a lot more time with him. Like, Dougal was his, it's not sponsoring, what is it called? Foster. He fostered him. He spent the majority of the time with him. So, maybe that just speaks to how well Colm's mind works and how he sees people and reads people.
Back at the body house, BJR and Mary are married. It's interesting that Alex doesn't perform the marriage here, but was that a change from the book in that Alex wasn't a cleric? In the book, he was a cleric, but also served as a support staff, basically, for Sandringham.
Yeah, they brought in a straight-up minister for this.
We know it's a change. What I'm saying is, did they do it just for funsies, or was it not made clear, or did they choose to not make Alex a cleric? Because I find the fact that the dude who's dying marries his lover, mother of his child, to his brother to save the baby, basically, and save Mary from shame and ridicule, I find that so poetic and romantic and much more tragic and devastating than having him watch some other dude come in.
Having him just be like the creeper over the ceremony?
In the bed, yeah.
Yeah, the creeper in the bed.
No, but I...
Can we make this title of this episode, The Creeper in the Bed?
No, we don't title these episodes.
Aww.
So Mary is crying, and it's interesting not having Jamie there. I wonder why they made the choice. I'm very happy that we get more screen time with Myrta, but it's just, I think, I understand condensing timelines. I understand condensing places and using Inverness because it's closer to Culloden, and that's a lot easier. You don't have to use Edinburgh and worry about all the troops or all the castle, whatever. I can go with that. I don't really understand why the choice to have Alex not be the cleric to marry them. And I don't understand Jamie's not being there. I get that we benefit from having Myrta there. I get it. But I don't understand why it was necessarily necessary. Back at the camp, Lord Murray has mentioned a possible surprise attack during Cumberland's birthday festivities. It's a 12-mile march by night. And this is the night march we discussed in our interview with Dr. Darren Lane. Now, O'Sullivan agrees to it, but only if Jamie and Murray lead one column and he and the prince the other. Then we shift to Colm's bed. Dougal comes to chat one last time. So Dougal has whiskey with him, but then pours out, or at least brings a whiskey bottle in there, and then pours out whatever's left. It's very odd. Colm says he's beyond any injury that Dougal could do him. Dougal is intent, however, on something. I wasn't quite sure. At first, when Dougal kept going forward with his words, it seemed like he was intent on making Colm's final moments, days, hours, whatever, painful and or miserable. Like, he wouldn't physically hurt him, but he would try and verbally hurt him. But once he started talking, Dougal only talked about how sad he was and how much it meant to him in a sad way that when his brother fell off the horse and his body started to break down, how like his life was destroyed a little bit. I mean, it was very touching.
I have things to say about that. But before I add my two cents to that, I would like to take a moment of silence for what I believe may have been the final mark me of the prince. So just a brief moment of silence. Okay. Dougal. I feel like Dougal, because he is a man of action and a man of passion and not a man of words, I think that over the years, he's held a lot back. And I don't know that he knows going into this how close to death his brother is, but given the fact that he's literally stripped him of everything he's been working for his whole life, I think he has nothing left. And I feel like he's like, if not now, when? And I think this probably humanized Dougal a lot more in the series than it did in the book. Because in the book, Dougal was very goal-oriented. He was, you know, for lack of a better term, of the two brothers. And Colin mentions this in this episode as well. He's like, you know, I was the brains and he was the cock of the relationship. And I think that he's taken on that responsibility and helped his brother in ways that most brothers probably wouldn't, just because of necessity. And I think that he reaches this point in his life that where now everything he's been working towards is for naught. He even created the heir to the Mackenzie family, and he gets no credit for it. He doesn't get to help raise his son, his physical, like his biological son. He doesn't get to have any part in that. It's like Colm recognizes his shortcomings and he's like, you're not enough to do what needs to be done. I see where you lack, and that is not enough for our clan. And I need these other people who aren't you to guide Hamish, my heir, to do the right thing. So it's a rough episode for Dougal. Things aren't going to end well. You know, we have one more episode left in the season. Book readers, you know what's coming. It's got to happen. But it was interesting to have this moment in this episode where I think this was a humanizing episode
for
two people. Yeah. For BJR, it was let's humanize that monster. And then Dougal, not a monster per se, but he's real rough around the edges. And to have them go through and give his backstory, have him tell basically his backstory.
And even though
backstory.
He's in no way, not even any of this, not even in the same territory as BJR, nor is he, you know, he lived at Leah, at least when Jamie was there, but nor is he, you know, even as badass. Well, he is badass, but he's not like Dougal. Even Myrta, who didn't necessarily need to be humanized, he was already humanized when he talked about how he fell in love with Jamie's mom. Mm-hmm. We've loved him forever. But even Myrta got even more humanized. He's already a mensch, right? Mm-hmm. But talk about it being a humanizing episode. Two people were humanized. Myrta, who's already human, who's already been deeply humanized.
Well, because they let him speak.
But he offered to marry Mary. And that's like, seriously? So, yeah.
And Dougal keeps referencing this horse accident. Like, that was the mm-hmm. big turning point.
Yeah,
and
he doesn't understand.
He didn't know. And it wasn't. Was it a catalyst? Sure. It was the beginning of the end because he wasn't showing symptoms of his degenerative disease. But I feel bad that he's always going to focus on the fact that it was this one horse accident that mm-hmm. turned his older brother, who was this scion, this person that protected him and he looked up to, into something he had to care for and take care of. And it became a burden.
So he looks down at Colm once he finishes talking and he hears that he's not really replying. And he looks down at his brother, who is now deceased. And I feel really bad for Dougal here. He kind of, he starts to cry at the end, right? He's like a cry for his brother, a cry for himself, probably mostly. And he says, you leave me alone in the dark. And what he wanted to say to him, he says, is now trapped in his mind, unsaid forever. Quote, all because you couldn't keep your arse on a bloody horse. Unquote.
I feel like it would have been better if Colm had been straight up with Dougal from, I wouldn't say day one, because I don't think he knew day one. But there was a point in Colm's life where he was like, Dougal is not the person to lead this clan. He's not. And it would have been a more fair thing for him to do to have told him from that day, dude, you are not level-headed enough to be the clan leader, as opposed to letting him continue to be the war chieftain and all of the things that he's allowed him to do over the years, which led him to think that perhaps
he had a chance.
Exactly. And all he did and all of these things that are now going to live in Dougal's head, he would have had so many opportunities to let them out and to feel a little bit of a relief on his part that he said it at least. And now the one person who he's directed all these feelings for and he's cared for all these years will never hear them because he unfortunately died. Do you think he actually took that yellow jasmine or was he still holding a full vial in his hand? Because I know in the books he didn't actually take it, right?
In the books, it wasn't yellow jasmine.
Well, no, it wasn't, but it was a vial of something and he never took it.
It was on the nightstand or whatever next to him, untouched. I think in here, I think he probably took it because it was awfully quick and awfully convenient timing-wise for him to just die right then, unless he's faking it, and I don't think he's faking it. But it's possible that that may or may not come out. So back at the body house, Alex is near his end. He's surrounded, however, by those he loves. And then his breathing stops. BJR breaks down slightly, which is kind of horrifying to see. But he looks astonishingly like Frank when he does so. BJR begins to beat his brother's chest. Now, how crazy is that?
Was it his chest? Because it looked like he was, like, beating him up, like, taking everything out on a corpse.
Well, it was a corpse, but it looked like his chest, like he was pounding his fists into his chest or something, but they didn't really show us.
I know. That's the thing. Because they didn't show us, couldn't tell if he was, like, beating his chest or punching him in the face.
Either way, it was shocking because it terrified Mary, and Claire, like, grabbed Mary and, like, hit her face. So either way, it was astonishing. And I wrote, was that good for you, BTR?
It was something.
And then he turns and leaves Mary with Claire in the body house. Back at the camp, Jamie cannot believe that Claire encouraged Mary to become his wife, but she corrects him. I encourage her to become his widow.
Mm-hmm.
So Jamie is still thinking they can succeed that night. It makes me wonder if Claire had no knowledge of the night march. If so, she could have told him what happened. I mean, she told him what happened on the 16th, which is the whole point of everything. But if he does he really think that, I don't know. I keep thinking it's like, Jamie with the this, Jamie with the that. It's like, well, Jamie, night march, we're going to do it. I'm like,
I
Jamie.
Know, but let's think about it. Let's talk about this night march for just a second. The thing about the night march, I'd never heard about the night march until we talked to Professor Darren Lane. That being said, if I haven't heard about it and I read the book how many times and I didn't notice that that happened, and which I guarantee you then Claire hadn't heard about it. And if Claire hadn't heard about it and didn't tell Jamie about it, then he must have thought doing that would have been different, which would have given
maybe
us a different outcome, which might be changed, which is why he was trying so hard to get them to go to London, because that didn't happen in history. So it's his belief.
My point is he's trying anything.
Absolutely. Because he's like, that didn't happen. You don't remember that happening? Let's try that.
So she promises that if BJR doesn't die at Culloden, she will help Jamie to bleed him. So he will die.
Badass Claire is back.
And I could be wrong, but here, when she's telling him to be careful during the march, this is the first time I remembered hearing their theme this episode.
You know I didn't listen for it.
Apparently. Because I'm Aral. Now I'm sounding like I'm from the East Coast or something.
Like Boston.
Or something.
I'm Aral.
So the night march, Jamie and Lord Murray's contingent are where they need to be, but the prince and O'Sullivan and their contingent is nowhere to be seen. Myrta shows up to relay that the prince and his men turned back. They lost their way in the dark. You've had enough of retreating, have you, Princey Pooh? And yet, here you go again. So Jamie wants to attack, but Lord Murray and probably Smarley prevails. They must call off the attack. They just don't have a chance. And with too few men, even with surprise, they just... it's not going to happen. It's all over. Culloden is a go. And now history, we know the big things cannot be changed.
It's true. Now, do we get to have predictions on the next episode, the finale, our hour and a half finale? Book readers, I'm going to say this. You'll know what I'm talking about. Non-book readers, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to be specific enough that it's going to make sense, but the whiplash moment we expected or wanted for this whole season, I am feeling like I'm hoping like we're going to get that whole whiplash thing with this next episode.
I think episode 213 will begin with the whiplash moment of
Dragonfly and Amber.
Of scene one
that
of the
is,
book.
That is my prediction. I'm putting it out there. If you have predictions, I would like to hear them. You can tweet them to me at Summer Rae on Twitter. Or you can send us an email form or send us feedback, some verbal feedback to our phone numbers. Ginger, what's that phone number?
916-604-4777. So one last shout out to our sponsor, Blue Apron. If you guys would like to take advantage of the two free meals with free shipping, that is blueapron.com/Outlander. So we have one more episode, which is in 2 weeks from now. So there is another episode, which we will be figuring out soon in the week that transpires between now and the finale. So thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/Outlander Pod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at Outlander Pod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/OutlanderPod or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.